Welcome to another Aurora Generators podcast. Today we are discussing Rudolf Diesel, the inventor of the diesel engine. You sent us a fascinating stack of sources on Rudolf Diesel. I mean, it's a name we all know because of the engine, obviously, but the man himself, his actual story, It's way more intricate and, frankly, pretty mysterious.
Absolutely. Yeah, this deep dive is going to take us on quite a journey. Starts in, like, Paris, mid-1800s, goes right through the Industrial Revolution, and lands a smack in the middle of how global trade works today, all through his invention, how it changed, and yeah, those big questions about how he disappeared. We're sticking strictly to the material you sent over.
Okay, so mission for today. Let's unpack who Rudolf Diesel really was, figure out the problem he was trying to crack, see how this game-changing engine happened, how it evolved into this, you know, global workhorse.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we absolutely have to get into that unsolved mystery around his death.
Right. We've pulled together bits from biographies, timelines, historical accounts, even some more modern takes on the engine's impact, all just from those sources you shared.
All right, let's jump right in. Starting with the man himself. Who was Rudolf Diesel before the engine, which shaped him?
Well, okay, so he was born in Paris, 1858. His parents were Bavarian immigrants. Childhood wasn't exactly smooth sailing. He actually got deported to England during the Franco-German War. Pretty disruptive, you can imagine. But he ended up in Germany and turned out to be, well, a brilliant student, especially in engineering. Studied at the Munich Polytechnic Institute under Carl von Linde. Key figure, Linde.
Carl von Linde. Wasn't he the big name in refrigeration? Like the refrigerator guy?
That's the one. Yeah, Diesel first worked for Linde's company, started in Paris, later ran their engineering department in Berlin. But even while he was doing the refrigeration stuff, his real passion, his focus was engines.
And here's where it gets really interesting.
Yeah.
He wasn't just like tinkering to build a better engine, was he? Sources hint at something deeper, maybe even a social angle.
Exactly. He was sort of a social theorist too, right? This thing called solidarismus that was about economic cooperation, that kind of thing. And his early idea for the engine was tied into that. He hoped it could help, you know, the little guy, small businesses, independent artisans compete against the big industries who could afford those massive steam engines. Thermodynamics for the people on those.
So he saw two problems. Engine inefficiency and this social imbalance.
Yeah.
What was the specific technical problem he was tackling with the engines back then?
Efficiency. That was the big one. Steam engines, those early internal combustion engines, they were just incredibly inefficient. Sources say maybe only 10% of the heat actually did useful work. Just terrible. He learned from Linde, from thermodynamics, that theoretically you could do way, way better. So he set out to build an engine that captured more of that wasted heat energy.
Okay, so armed with the theory and this kind of social mission, he starts experimenting.
Yeah.
But the sources make it sound like this was pretty dangerous work.
Oh, incredibly dangerous. Yeah. His research was intense, pushing materials right to their limits. There's this one story about an early test, ammonia vapor engine. It just exploded violently, nearly killed him. He spent months in the hospital, had lasting health issues, problems with his eyesight. And this was while he was thinking up the diesel engine concept. Rough start.
Wow. So he survives that, keeps refining his ideas. What was the fundamental concept, the big idea that made his engine so different?
It all boiled down to compression ignition. That was the breakthrough. See, petrol engines use a spark plug, right? To ignite fuel and air mixed together. Diesel's idea. Just compress the air. Squeeze it in the cylinder so hard under such high pressure that it gets incredibly hot, like superheated. Then you inject the fuel into that super hot air and boom, it ignites all by itself just from the heat of compression.
Ah, okay. So the heat from the squeeze is the spark, basically. No actual spark plug needed. That's, yeah, that's fundamentally different.
Exactly. That was the core innovation. He got it patented in 1892, published his theory in a paper in 1893.
And the first one that actually worked, what was that like?
Sources describe it as the single massive cylinder, like 10 feet tall, iron, big flywheel. And then August 10th, 1893, in Augsburg, Germany, it ran on its own power, first time ever.
It must have been a huge moment. And he'd calculated this amazing potential efficiency from his theory.
He had. Initially, based on pure theory, he thought maybe 75% efficiency was possible compared to that lousy 10% from steam engines. But what's interesting, and the sources point this out, is that 75%, well, it turned out to be a bit too optimistic. He realized his first theory had flaws, actually filed a corrected patent for the theory later in 93. Still, the best engine he actually built and got tested in 1897. it hit 26.2% efficiency, which, okay, not 75%, but still leagues ahead of the 10% rivals, shows how hard it is to turn theory into reality.
Right. And beyond just efficiency, what else was good about this new engine?
Yeah.
And the fuel?
Several things. It could use a heavier type of fuel than gasoline. That fuel eventually just became known as diesel, right? It was cheaper to make from crude oil, gave off fewer dangerous fumes, so less likely to explode, and it had a much higher flash point, safer to store, safer to handle than gasoline. Big pluses.
Okay, so more efficient, uses cheaper, safer fuel. He thought it would help the independent artisans. Did it actually play out that way? Did it boost the little guy?
Well, yes and no. It could be used by small businesses, sure, but the sources are pretty clear. Industrialists loved it just as much, maybe even more. Its power and efficiency were perfect for big factories. It really became a major driver in the later part of the Industrial Revolution. So if you look at the big picture, its use spread way beyond what Diesel first imagined. By 1912, just 15 years after that first working engine, there were over 70,000 diesel engines out there, mostly in factories, running generators, stationary power.
And this success made him pretty wealthy, a millionaire by late 1800s.
Oh, yeah. Licensing the design internationally brought him a lot of money. Big companies like Sulzer, MAN, Krupp, they were all involved early on building and developing the engines.
And the sources seem to show things really took off after his main patent expired in 1908.
Absolutely. That expiration date was like opening the floodgates. Suddenly, everyone could innovate and apply the tech. You see the first diesel ships popping up in 1903. Then 1912 is a big year. First diesel train in Switzerland. First ocean-going diesel tanker, the Vulcanus. That tanker used like 40% fewer resources than steamships. Huge deal. By 1913, commercial ships were adopting it. Even the U.S. Navy for submarines.
But still not really in cars at this point.
No, not yet. Those early engines were just massive, heavy. Sources say some were the size of a small house, just not practical for a car back then.
Okay, let's unpack this. How did it go from being this giant engine for factories and ships to powering trucks, buses, eventually cars? What was that evolution like?
It's a fascinating story, really detailed in the sources. After World War I, that's when the potential for transport really started booming. Trucks started using them in the 1920s. Trains in the 1930s. And get this, by 1939, sources say about a quarter of all global sea trade was already diesel powered. That's quick.
Right. And Clessie Cummins over in the U.S., he was a big part of getting it into trucks.
Yeah. Key player there. Adapted the engine specifically for trucks in the 20s. There's that famous story from 1929. He drove a diesel limo 800 miles, got over 31 miles per gallon. Impressive stuff back then. Definitely got the attention of truck companies like Kenworth. Yeah. Like you said, the first actual diesel passenger car didn't show up until 1936. Mercedes-Benz. So the big question is, how'd they shrink them down, make them faster for road vehicles? A major step was this thing called the Ricardo Comet Swirl Chamber in the 1930s. You used a little pre-chamber, sort of a separate space, to get the fuel and air mixing better before ignition. That helped make engines smaller, rev higher, more powerful, revolutionized diesel for things like London buses.
And the efficiency kept climbing beyond that initial 26%.
Oh, definitely. Continuous improvement over the decades. That 26.2% was just the start. Today, the best modern diesels. They can top 50% efficiency. Pretty amazing. Later tech helped too, like common rail injection. Development started in the 70s. It uses one high-pressure fuel line, feeding all the injectors really precisely. And direct injection became huge for modern car diesels. You saw it in things like the Ford Transit back in 84. Much better combustion control.
The oil crisis in the 70s seems like it must have been a huge boost for diesel cars, too.
Absolutely. Suddenly, everyone was focused on fuel economy and diesel's efficiency.
Yeah.
Super attractive for passenger cars then. Sales really took off, especially in Europe, through the 80s and 90s. Part of the appeal, sources say, was lower CO2 emissions compared to petrol engines at the time. Today, apparently, something like half the new cars in Europe are still diesel.
But looking globally, its biggest impact today. It's still not really passenger cars, is it?
No, you're right. The sources are crystal clear on this. The overwhelming impact today is heavy-duty stuff. Global trade. Over 95% of big heavy-duty trucks run on diesel. And shipping. Those massive marine diesel engines in today's container ships. They're literally called the backbone of the modern global economy in the sources.
Yeah, I saw that detail. An engine four stories high, 75,000 horsepower. That's just mind-blowing.
It really is. And those giants hit over 50% efficiency, let ships like the Ever Luna go thousands and thousands of miles without refueling. The picture the sources paint is, diesel powers basically every step of getting goods around the world. farm equipment, trucks, trains, factory generators, the cranes at the ports, and the ships themselves. 99% of modern cargo ships use diesel. It's the engine that moves the world, literally.
Okay, so let's shift gears to the final chapter of Rudolf Diesel's own story.
Yeah.
Which is deeply puzzling. Despite all this incredible success, the engine taking over, his life ends in tragedy, or at least deep mystery.
Yeah, it's a really somber turn, but completely captivating. So, September 29th, 1913, evening. He gets on this steamship, the SS Dresden, in Antwerp. He's heading to London, got a meeting about a new factory, and also supposed to meet the British Navy. Talk about putting his engines in their submarines. Crucial stuff.
And then he just disappeared overnight.
Exactly. Went to his cabin, never seen alive again. The next morning, his cabin's empty, bed not slept in, night clothes laid out, but his hat and overcoat found neatly folded right by the railing on the after deck. Very strange. And yet the immediate thing is nobody knew what happened. His body wasn't found for over 10 days. Floating in the North Sea, a Belgian sailor found him.
The official ruling ended up being suicide, right? And what was the reasoning for that, according to the sources?
Well, sources mentioned reports that he was in serious debt. Bad investments, apparently. Also, maybe in poor health. And some accounts suggest maybe a history of suicide in his family, though that seems a bit less concrete in the sources we have.
But that's just one possibility. This whole thing sparked tons of conspiracy theories, couldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. The timing, where he was going, it was perfect fodder for speculation. He's off to meet the British Navy right before World War I kicks off. One early newspaper headline, mentioned in the sources, basically screamed, "Thrown into the sea to stop sale of patents to British government." Intense.
And because he talked about using vegetable oil fuel early on, the big oil theory popped up too.
Yep, that was a big one. Murdered by agents from big oil trusts. Because Diesel himself had predicted vegetable oils could become as important as petroleum someday. Some even wondered about coal companies, since diesel was way more efficient than coal-burning steam engines. But it raises a good question. How likely are these? One source actually argues against the big oil theory, pointing out that in 1913, diesel engines weren't really in cars or trucks yet. They were still mostly huge industrial things. So that source suggests they weren't actually a real threat to oil dominance and transportation fuel right at that moment. Interesting perspective.
Were there even theories about German spies?
Yes.
Or maybe the British faked his death?
Yeah, those are mentioned too. Maybe German agents stopped him sharing U-boat secrets. Or even this wild idea that the British faked his death so he could defect and secretly work on sub-engines in Canada. But ultimately, the sources all kind of conclude the mystery's still unsolved. Suicide, accident, murder. Based on the evidence we have here, we may never know for sure.
So where does that leave the diesel engine today? And what's its future look like? We've seen how it started, how it evolved, how it powers so much. How does today's engine compare to Diesel's original vision?
Well, today's diesel engines are definitely direct descendants, but they're incredibly refined versions. Like we said, efficiency is way up, over 50% in some cases, compared to his, 26% prototype? That's a huge leap. And the size range is just massive now. Tiny ones for cars, all the way up to those absolute monsters powering ships.
But the sources do bring up the environmental side. Mm-hmm. Emissions, particulates, that's a big challenge today.
Yes, definitely. Like any engine burning fossil fuels, it's something the technology is really grappling with, finding cleaner ways to operate.
What about different fuels? You mentioned Diesel himself used peanut oil. Is that part of the future conversation? Biodiesel?
It is, yeah. The sources show a real renewed interest in biodiesel. It connects right back to Diesel's early work, his vision of using plant oils. And it's often seen as potentially less polluting than standard diesel, but it's complicated. Sources also mention the controversies, like, you know, using land that could grow food, potentially pushing up food prices. It's not a simple switch.
So thinking ahead, based on these sources, is something likely to completely replace diesel? Or does it still have unique strengths?
The sources don't really point to a complete replacement across the board. Not yet, anyway. They really emphasize how vital it still is today because of its specific advantages. That high torque, the sheer power for heavy loads, combined with its efficiency over long distances, it's still kind of unbeatable for big trucks, construction gear, farming equipment, and especially global shipping. That incredible range you get from diesel efficiency is just essential for moving goods between continents.
It really seems like for the heavy lifting, for moving the bulk of the world's stuff, diesel is still king based on this material.
That's exactly the takeaway from these sources. Its future definitely involves tackling those environmental issues, maybe shifting more towards biofuels or other tech. But its core strengths, that power, efficiency, and range for heavy-duty work, make it arguably the most indispensable engine driving globalization today. It's still the workhorse.
Wow, quite a story. From Rudolf Diesel thinking he could help small artisans, to his engine powering ships bigger than buildings.
Yeah.
And then that whole mystery around his death. It's a lot to unpack.
It really is. Shows how an invention can just take on a life of its own, right? Go in directions the inventor never even dreamed of. And how progress isn't just one person. It's decades of work by many, many people building on that initial idea.
And that unresolved ending for Diesel himself.
Yeah.
It just adds this incredible, almost haunting layer to the whole thing.
It does. It makes you wonder about everything he was dealing with. Personally, financially, and the huge geopolitical stuff happening right then, just before the war.
So here's a final thought, something for you to chew on. Diesel wanted his engine to help the little guy maybe run on peanut oil. Today, it's the muscle behind giant global corporations, mostly burns petroleum diesel, and biofuels are, well, complicated. How different might things look now if his original vision, the fuel source, and who it helped, had actually panned out?
Yeah, something to think about next time you see one of those huge container ships or just a truck rolling down the road.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. We hope it gave you some new perspective on Rudolf Diesel, the man, the mystery, and the engine that really does power our world.